Hello and welcome to PCI's Code It podcast. I'm Kristen Johansson, Editor-in-Chief of PCI Magazine. The supply chain crisis has been causing major challenges for coatings manufacturers and the suppliers that provide the raw materials for their formulations. We will be addressing this topic on September 8th during our keynote address at Coatings Trends and Technologies, when Eric Beyer, President and CEO of the National Association of Chemical Distributors, will discuss the supply chain crisis and what we can do to help end it. I have asked Eric, as well as John Logue, Chief Executive Officer of Royal Pigments and Chemicals, and Mark Cox, Director, Procurement and Supply Chain at Superior, to join me on this podcast to get the conversation started and get their perspectives on this very pressing topic. Welcome to all three of you.
Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, well, I have a lot of questions for you, so let's go ahead and get started. John, my first question is for you. What is the status of the shipping situation right now? Have things gotten better or worse?
That's a great question. And actually, the just recently, the Shanghai lockdown has caused a lot of folks issues. It's only partially been lifted and has a cascade of effects on the internal and consequently the external supply chains coming out of China. We started shipping May 1st out of Shanghai port from a river port upstream, but there's so many issues with imports of raw materials and shutdowns. It's quite draconian right now. Other than this lockdown, shipping has become somewhat more predictable and consistent, but still extremely expensive. We've adjusted our routes when we ran into difficulties. We basically stopped shipping out of the port of Chennai in India because dangerous goods was getting bumped. And I think you're going to have that question answered maybe a little later in the podcast. And all the ships from that port are feeder vessels, and just you get to a feeder vessel port and everything gets bumped. So, yeah. Has it gotten better? It has gotten slightly better, but recently it got worse because of the Shanghai lockdown. But overall, if you're shipping goods out of Asia, you need to think outside the box, react quickly, and have deep pockets. We've increased our inventories by over 300%.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I would tell to folks listening in here, Kristen, is the fact that, you know, you look at where we are with the traffic that comes into the San Pedro Bay Area. I mean, 40% of what is brought into the country comes through that waterway, if you will, in those two ports with LA and Long Beach. And the fact of the matter is that on a daily basis, if you're looking at the vessel activity that are sitting outside in the San Pedro Bay, they have not diminished over the last 3 months as this, the Shanghai port lockdown, if you will, has taken place. You would think they would be catching up more. So unfortunately, that has not been the case, and that really is disconcerting because this is the time where they need to be making up ground, and they're not. So once the activity in China resurfaces in terms of manufacturing being full scale back online, the Congo line outside of the San Pedro Bay Area for both LA and Long Beach is going to be worse, and that's what I'm most concerned about, especially as we look at the summer season, retail picking up for the fall holidays, and then we get to the Christmas time period. So we have got to start thinking about moving product a whole lot more efficiently and effectively than we're doing right now.
So we've, of course, all heard about and been impacted by the shipping delays and increased prices. But in some cases, shipping companies are refusing to bring in some essential chemicals altogether. Can you tell me more about that?
Certainly. I'll take that one, Kristen. Yes, we have seen for several months now dangerous goods loads being pushed to the back, not getting the bookings we needed. It's just a very frustrating situation to be in. But I think it goes back to the ease and convenience during the pandemic, the height of the pandemic, for ordering of consumer goods. The story I always tell is it's easier to load a container full of toasters than it is a dangerous good. A lot less paperwork, a lot less restrictions. So I think folks just took the easy route. We also need to keep in mind that I think right now we're above 30% in blank sailings for scheduled sailings. 30% of those have been blanked out. So we've limited the capacity that's out there. And then I think people have just taken an easier path with the consumer goods. Now, John mentioned some struggles in India. We're starting to see that in Europe as well, where dangerous goods, flammables are getting are getting moved out in the schedule, and we're losing those opportunities to ship. We have just recently, I mean, literally in the last few days, seen things start to ease as far as accepting bookings in China for some of these products. So some fingers crossed that that may improve, but it's been a frustrating several months.
This is John Logue. I want to make a comment on that one too. I think people need to understand that, you know, when a ship takes double the amount of time to get across the Pacific, that means you have to have double the amount of ships. And so, you know, as you just said, something's got to give and dangerous goods gets bumped.
Yeah, and I think that's a frustrating angle for all of our members. You know, you heard it from Mark, but, you know, when you see some of the steamship lines that are blatantly blackballing the movement of hazardous materials and dangerous goods, they have common carrier obligations as carriers coming to U.S. ports to move that product. Failing to do so is a violation of those common carrier obligations. And so for us as an association, seeing the our members go through these types of struggles where they're just not able to get on a ship, or the fee is extraordinarily high, or it's, you know, you're pushed off by weeks upon weeks before you're actually able to land a spot on a ship. It's really frustrating because a lot of the product that our guys are bringing in are critical to everyday life of the American consumer, and that's being forgotten sometimes. So it's really important that we see those dangerous goods being brought in as they were previously, once again, back to the level that needs to be. You know, I could sit there and talk about, hey, you know, there've been delays that have been through the rail system for water treatment facilities, namely the movement of, you know, things like chlorine. And mm-hmm. So there have been facilities that have not been able to get product in quickly enough. And you have municipalities in Tennessee, Florida, you know, Alabama, Georgia, even as of last summer, and are already starting to see issues right now where they won't, if they don't get their chlorine, their water treatment facilities are going to be shut down. You know, those types of things are the real world application of what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. You know, the vitamin water and the Gatorade and the Coca-Cola and all the cleaning products that you use in a house have a thing called citric acid in it. Well, that is essentially manufactured exclusively over in Asia, namely China, and brought across, in, you know, on these container ships. And then, you know, off it goes here into the supply chain in the U.S. And so when we don't have that product, that's a big dent in what we receive as consumers, whether it's for drinking or whether it's for cleaning.
Christian, if I could take just a moment, because I really would, now that Eric's chimed in that way, I'd really like to extend our appreciation as a member of NACD. I get to read what NACD is doing on our behalf, not just in ocean freight, in other things as well. But Eric, I just wanted to reach out and say thank you for helping to protect us, looking out for our best interest, and advocating on our behalf. It is greatly appreciated.
Thanks much, Mark. I appreciate that.
So I wanted to ask what the impact is of, you know, not receiving those materials in the amounts that we need.
This is John. I can answer that question. So, you know, our company supplies into multiple different sectors, coatings. We supply a lot into electronics. We're a manufacturing company and also a distributor. And so what happens is, we end up making what we have in stock, not what we need. And many of our customers are the same way. It really juggles up the scheduling of manufacturing. It ripples through the supply chain, trucking. Trucks are late, trucks don't show up. One of the areas where we've had a lot of, I can't say fun, but concentration on is on the air freight. And our operations group has become real specialists. And I give them a lot of credit for their agility to do these air freights, because as customers run out of product, there's no options of not manufacturing. They have to manufacture. So we end up air freighting stuff in. And maybe 3 or 4 years ago, air freights, it was pretty easy. You get it, you know, it takes about a week. But now it could take up to 3 weeks. It comes in at all times of the night and weekends, and it's just a debacle.
So at the top of the podcast, you mentioned the Shanghai port shutdown. Obviously, that's having an effect right now. But is there concern that when it reopens, that as well will have a bullwhip effect on the supply chain?
Yeah, Kristen, this is Mark. This one is really important to me because I have a lot of trepidation around what that expectation is, if and when that all frees up. You know, right now they're reporting that there are over 30% more ships waiting to berth in the port of Shanghai than there was a month ago. So we are in that kind of several few to several hundred ship range right now. And the things that really concern me when you talk about bullwhip, number one, when those start to move, and just like John said, with the increased transit times overall, we now really have to double the amount of vessels that are coming. So that's going to put a stress on an already strained transportation infrastructure here domestically. So that includes, you know, the issues that we're experiencing currently with rail, chassis and driver availability to move those, and then just what happens at the domestic ports. So I do have grave concerns about, again, adding to a problem that already exists. Then we're going to get into the issue of prioritization. We've seen that in the past when we go back to last year when things really ramped up around the Christmas season. It's just this prioritization of what gets moved, who's get moved, and timing on that. And then the other thing for me is this uncertainty about the labor negotiations between the International Longshore and Warehouse Union and the Pacific Maritime Association. So I think those negotiations just started. I think the contract expires July 1st. If, don't necessarily anticipate one, but should there be any interruption at all, it's going to create, in my opinion, a really rough situation that we haven't experienced in quite some time. So yes, there's going to be, absolutely going to be a bullwhip effect. It's just how extensive it will end up being.
Right.
Yeah, and I would echo what Mark was saying, especially in the latter part when it comes to the negotiations between the dock workers and the ports out there. I mean, this is an opportunity during a midterm election year for the White House to step up and lead. So whether it's the president or the vice president who hails from the state of California and knows that port system pretty well, they have really got to interject themselves into this discussion to make sure that, you know, I think negotiations conducted or started in earnest yesterday officially. And as Mark said, they've got essentially 60 days to figure this out. And while publicly both sides have said that there's a willingness to A, negotiate in good faith and get a deal done, and if it can't be to keep operations ongoing past July 1, it has got to happen at the top levels to inject themselves and saying we have got to have a decision soon that works for both sides so we can keep the supply chain going through that very important port or those two ports out in the San Pedro Bay area. Because otherwise, if that area gets shut down, you know, whether it's the carriers bringing in containers, the truckers getting them off the docks, getting them into rail cars, whatever it's going to be, everything comes to a grinding halt, and we just cannot afford for that to happen.
Eric, there has also been speculation that Russia's invasion of Ukraine could begin impacting the supply chain in North America and elsewhere. Have you seen any slowdowns coming out of Europe?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of slowdown. It started immediately upon the invasion happening, and you know, whether it was ships that were leaving ports out of Ukraine with, you know, the phosphate chemical family, you know, whether it's, you know, phosphorus that goes into certain types of fertilizers, that kind of stuff. People had to reroute some of the product going to other ports in Europe so it could get clear coming to the United States. So we initially saw a whole bunch of delays, and a lot of those delays are now finally arriving at U.S. destinations. So there has been a fair amount of delays altogether over the last 3 months, and I think it's going to continue to be the case. The important part to remember here is that there are a lot of raw materials that come out of that part of the world. So whether it is Ukraine itself or Russia, you know, now we're looking at the, you know, where do we get other, you know, potentially raw materials if we can't get them there? And the problem is that some of those materials are made or harvested exclusively or mined exclusively in that part of the country or the world. So, you know, that's the struggle, is you've got the delays and you also have the availability of product that can only be found in certain parts of the world that are not willing to ship. So it is a cascading effect, and one where, you know, our folks have done a great job trying to find opportunities to work with other countries and other parts of the world where there could be alternatives, and they're going to continue to do so. But there are going to be delays coming out of Europe. There have been, there will continue to be for some time to come.
Yeah, I want to reiterate what Eric said about Ukraine is it just ripples through the supply chain. Belarus and Russia supply 40% of the potash in the world, and that's causing havoc in a lot of things, as Eric said, phosphorus or potassium-based products, and just people are scrambling all around to secure supply, and we just didn't need this kind of additional shock to the supply system.
So in his State of the Union address, President Biden referenced some shipping companies' 1,000% price increases and record high profits. Did that help to spur any action in Washington to address this issue?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I think there was certainly a movement at the beginning of the year as we saw a continuation of 2021 into 2022 when it came to delays and customer service issues and price increases. So I think the fact that you had the leader of the free world in part of his State of the Union address highlighting some of those issues, it's a big deal. You don't see shipping in the president's State of the Union address every year. In fact, you never have until this year, pretty much. So I think it definitely did light a bit of a fire. DOJ has been conducting some investigations. Congress is having some hearings now. And most importantly, we're seeing the Ocean Shipping Reform Act really starting to move through Congress. I mean, it was passed by the Senate about a month ago. Its version is a little different than the House version, but nonetheless, it's progress. The House has passed their version in a standalone format, and then they've also attached it to two bigger legislative vehicles. So in all, it's actually been passed by the House of Representatives three times. So I think ultimately you're seeing a lot of headwinds behind that Ocean Shipping Reform Act bill. And I think it will happen, it'll get approved by Congress sometime this summer and signed into law by the president. So it certainly doesn't hurt when you have the president talking about it. And I think it definitely did light a bit of a fire in Congress to get something done.
So even with these fixes underway, do you think the effects are here to stay a bit longer? I know we don't have a crystal ball, but how long do you anticipate we will be grappling with the delays, the shortages, and the increased costs resulting from the situation?
This is John. We're going to be grappling with this for years. It takes a long time for shipping companies to build ships, and I actually don't think they're really that motivated to build a lot of ships when the pricing is the way it's at. And just the ability for, Eric and I were talking the other day about this at a conference, that we have ports which are very antiquated. They may be able to get containers off ships, but getting them onto rail, getting them into trucks, we need some blockchain to make the whole paperwork side of this situation run faster. There's a lot of things to do to fix this debacle in supply chain, and it's going to take years. And I think what's going to happen eventually is there'll be some nearshoring of certain molecules, and I think a lot of manufacturers will double or triple source products and geographically distribute them from Europe, U.S., and in Asia. So we're going to be grappling with this for at least 2 or 3 years more.
Yeah, I would agree with John, and I think there's the short term and the long term you got to look at. I mean, the long term is we need to modernize the port infrastructure system in this country. We are so far behind some other countries, Europe and Asia, in some regards, that it's kind of mind-numbing that we haven't done much in the last 40 years to improve the infrastructure at our ports. So we've got to find a way to do it. It can't be just throwing money at it with Congress saying, here's an appropriation for 1 year and you got to do it. You got to have a plan. And much like we have a national highway system, we got to recognize we have a national port system, and we've got to find a way to modernize those ports to accommodate the newer ships that are coming in and the products are being brought. The short term is we got to get through the mud. And the best way to do that is what our guys are doing, which is on a logistics front, finding any way they can to move containers via truck, rail, or otherwise when it comes in. I mean, at this point, I don't see how this is going to get any better over the next 2 to 3 years, as John was saying. And I think, look, the fact of the matter is while we may have some animosity towards rail and the ocean carriers, they are part of an important triangle along with the trucking community to ensure that the supply chain moves efficiently. It behooves our guys to see it working well, and it helps the American consumer. If those three parts are not functioning and are on the same page with each other, the American consumer really has a tough time getting its product because the supply chain comes to a slow halt. We have got to find a way to get Congress and the regulators to help push for the short term to alleviate some of the strains that we're seeing in the supply chain process. There's a lot of different avenues we can look at, but everybody has got to recognize that those three entities have to be working together, and they have to be finding ways to expedite the movement of product, which they're not doing right now.
Yeah, and
Eric.
to add to Eric's, the infrastructure bill, I think, had $40 billion for ports. You could spend that just in Long Beach and LA and not even get it to where it needs to be. You look at some of the Asian ports, Shanghai, in Singapore and elsewhere. I mean, these are absolutely amazing ports, and they're being specifically designed for these huge container ships and all the logistics, you know, going back in country.
And, you know, I'd like to add, I'd like to thank Eric for including these other modes, because we're struggling throughout the entire supply chain. I know we talked a lot today about ocean freight, but, you know, we have a rail system that is really overwhelmed right now, short on equipment, short on employees. Transportation, we've had a driver shortage in trucking transportation. We've had a driver shortage ongoing for at least the last 10 years, and it's just not going to get any better. So I really appreciate what Eric said about we need to look at all legs of that, because I think we are going to have to, if we're not already doing that, look at how we're going to revisit the supply chain. You know, John mentioned that he's had to shift to air freight. That's an issue. It's an issue both in cost and availability anymore, because a lot of people are doing that shift. So we need to look at all elements of this and be prepared to address all of them, and not just be short-sighted on how do we fix today's problem, but understand that this is going to go on for a long time if we don't look at all of it.
All right. Well, I have one more question. Eric, I'll start with you. What else can be done to help address the situation?
Well, I think first and foremost is that, you know, we know the American consumer is not getting certain things right now. I mean, you hear about, you know, formula for babies and other things. I mean, everything that's been brought into this country and is assembled into some kind of final product is based upon the chemical industry and what our role is to make sure those products are provided on a shelf for a certain material item. I think it's critical that our folks, whether it's the NACD members or, you know, the consumer that's not getting something, is they really articulate to their members of Congress that this is a big problem. This is what's affecting me. You know, this is, I can't get something available that is critical to my kids in terms of healthcare or to my business, and make sure it operates and we can make payroll. Sometimes a squeaky wheel does get, what it needs at the end of the day, if you will. And I think ultimately we have to put more political pressure on Congress and the regulators to actually go through and push those three components of the supply chain, the trucking, the rail, and the ocean carrier side, to do a better job, do it more effectively, do it more efficiently. That's how we win. And, you know, getting more media limelight as to what's going on in the marketplace is important too. But ultimately, this comes down to the businesses and the American consumer really, you know, making some noise, saying we have got to do better than what we have right now, and you guys have got to find a way to fix it.
Mark and John, do you have any final
sure.
thoughts?
I think, you know, just to reiterate what Eric was saying, the country needs a long-term plan when it comes to infrastructure, especially ports. We compete against countries which have 25-year plans, and having a, you know, 1, 2, 3-year plan is not efficient. It doesn't address the needs, and we'll be left behind if we can't modernize our infrastructure when it comes to our port system.
Yeah, and I think to John's point is that political pressure to, you know, the Congress and to the DOT and the FMC and the Surface Transportation Board and all the regulatory agencies that have jurisdiction over ports and rail and trucking. You know, Congress operates on an appropriation cycle that goes year to year. The authorizers, namely the agencies and the authorizers in Capitol Hill, they can work on 5-6 year reauthorization type programs. There has got to be a way for us to outline a program that goes for 5 or 6 years, so there's some certainty in the development process to ensure that the ports that are so critical to our infrastructure to meet the needs of the American consumer can be built, they can be modernized, and they can be effective and efficient for the long term. If you cannot do those types of things, we're going to continue to have this problem, forgetting COVID. I mean, these issues existed before COVID. They just got exacerbated by the fact that we had COVID coming at us in March 2020. We have got to find a way to revolutionize what we're doing with the port infrastructure, so it's more modern and can keep up with, you know, the folks that we're competing with, whether it's in Asia or South America or Europe.
And then I would add, and again, I really appreciate the work that NACD does on our behalf in DC, but, you know, on a granular level for me, what I'm finding is that it's kind of creativity and collaboration in the short term. So we have to find different ways to move things, different ways to do things. And I think for once we're really collaborating with our competition. So when we're all in this together, we get an opportunity to sit down and talk. And where we used to kind of take pride in having a leg up on somebody, now all of a sudden we're sharing experiences and stories and solutions and kind of collaborating on how we can do things differently, better, more creatively. So I think we have to be thinking that way, because it is a mess at the moment. So anything that we can do to help that in the short term, while people like NACD are working on our behalf, I think we have to take all those advantages we can.
Okay, well, we have covered a lot of information today. I'd like to thank all three of you for taking the time out of your, I'm sure, very busy schedules to join me for the podcast and for sharing your ideas and your perspectives with me.
Thanks for the opportunity, Kristen.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Kristen.
You're welcome. And Eric, I'm really looking forward to hearing your keynote address at CTT in September. Obviously, the situation is pretty fluid, so it will be really interesting to see where things stand a few months from now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to coming out there as well, and hopefully it'll have gotten better and not worse.
Right, I know.
We'll know one way or the other, and I'll report back, that's for sure.
And for our listeners who are interested in hearing Eric's keynote address and learning more about CTT, you can visit our event website at codingsconference.com. Thanks for listening today.